Hello and welcome to this Microsoft TechNet session on Microsoft Exchange Server 2007 Client Access and Web Services. My name is Robin McManus. Let's start the session by reviewing exactly what we will be covering. Let's run through an outline of what we're talking about today and why we're talking about it. In this section, we'll be covering Microsoft Exchange 2007 Client Access Services. The overall goal of client access services is to add value to the data in your inbox by letting you access that data from wherever you are. As well as Outlook Web Access and Mobile Device Access will be covering some new client access features introduced in Exchange 2007. We'll look at the various underlying components of Exchange 2007, client access services, and we'll also illustrate the concepts and features where possible with demonstrations. As with most TechNet sessions, some prior experience of Microsoft technologies or similar technologies is always helpful. As we go through today's session, you will hear various Microsoft acronyms and terminology. While we will explain all new terms related to today's session, there are some general terms from the industry or from other versions of Microsoft products that we may not be able to spend time on. To help you out, we have listed the areas that it may be helpful to be familiar with, either prior to this session or referenced afterwards. You should have some IT administration experience with Microsoft Exchange Server 2003, Exchange 2000 Server, or Exchange Server 5.5. To cover the topics mentioned and keep the session flow going, we have divided the session up into the following agenda items. First, we're going to be talking about Outlook Web Access and how it's evolved since Exchange Server 2003. Then we'll look at improvements to calendaring functionality. Next, we'll look at a feature set that's new to Exchange 2007, Unified Messaging. Then we'll discuss Exchange Web Services and programmatic access to messaging data. Finally, we'll cover Exchange Server ActiveSync improvements. First, let's get some background information on Exchange Server themes. The goal with Exchange 2007 was to deliver on three themes. These themes were chosen back in 2003, and they have stayed quite constant during the course of the last 2.5 years since Exchange 2003 shipped. The first theme focuses on making sure that IT professionals get what they need. Many say that email is the most important application in their organizations, that without it they face big problems. They also say that current systems are too complex and expensive to maintain, and that many of the day-to-day tasks they perform would be better suited to script automation rather than tedious manual configuration. Exchange 2007 is all about giving you that control. Information workers say that they need access not just to email, but also to voicemail and faxes. They don't want to be tied to their desks. Either mobile devices are being widely adopted for good reason. People are mobile. Users want anywhere access to all sorts of messaging data. Finally, users say that setting up a meeting and choosing a room to hold it can be frustrating. Trying to tie everyone's schedule together can waste a lot of time. Exchange 2007 aims to make things easier for the information worker in regard to this. Finally, email needs to be secure. For most administrators, this is their top concern. Removing spam and viruses to provide a clean messaging stream needs to be a core design goal for many messaging systems these days. And it's one that Exchange 2007 provides. In addition, you want to be in control of the messaging environment to the extent that you can conform to legal and corporate-wide policies that require you to journal, archive and search through messages, and this needs to be easy. When Exchange 2007 was being designed, these three themes were kept to the fore, ensuring that Exchange would provide the messaging system administrators need. This session deals with how Exchange Server 2007 provides anywhere access, but it's worth noting that administrative control is covered in TechNet session IT Pro X 102 and protection is covered in session IT Pro X 103. Let's focus for a moment on server roles. There are basically two types of server roles, one designed to be deployed in the perimeter network, outside the corporate intranet, with no access to Active Directory, and to a group of server roles designed to be installed inside the intranet with access to Active Directory. The server in the perimeter network, called the Edge Transport Server, is isolated from Active Directory and functions as the message, hygiene, and routing engine. It's responsible for filtering messages as they arrive from untrusted networks. Like the internet, although it is not part of your Active Directory forest, to ensure that it can deliver messages to the correct recipient, it needs to access to Active Directory information, which is provided by an instance of ADAM installed locally and synchronized with an instance within your intranet. This role can be combined with others, and as that would compromise security to some extent. Connectors are used to route messages to and from the intranet. Message routing within the intranet or between trusted organizations is handled by the hub transport server. This role can be combined with others when required. The client access server role enables non-MIPI clients like POP, IMAP and Outlook Anywhere to connect to Exchange. It functions like a front-end server does in Exchange 2003, without all the mailbox and routing elements to slow things down. The mailbox server is more like the traditional Exchange server that we saw in Exchange 2003, with an information store and associated public and private stores. However, it doesn't handle non-MIPI client access or message routing. These are handled by other roles. By breaking a single server into distinct functional units, storage, routing and access, the system works better, with a server able to focus on a given task. The unified messaging server is new and lets you combine email with both voicemail and fax services. When you install a unified messaging server, you give your users a unified box. It links your PBX system with Exchange, handles voice calls and provides answering service and voicemail. Next, we'll look at how you might combine these roles to support your organization. Now, we'll put the whole thing together and step through the roles one at a time. Let's think about a message that arrives at your organization. The Edge Transport Server sits isolated in the perimeter network. Routing messages to and from the internet, messages are fitted using agents, like the Connection Filtering Agent, which accepts or rejects SMTP connections from remote hosts based on IP addresses. Messages are also filtered based on sender, sender reputation, recipient address, and content. You can also combine third-party antivirus and anti-spam solutions to the Edge Transport Server to provide a clean message stream into your organization. Smaller organizations may not implement Edge servers, preferring instead to use a hosted solution, like Microsoft Exchange Hosted Services. Once the message is deemed safe, the Edge passes it along to the Hub Transport Server. Connectors are defined on both the Edge Transport and Hub Transport Servers to route messages from the perimeter network into your intranet. Connectors are defined in pairs. For example, a send connector to the hub has a corresponding receive connector at the edge. Communication between edge and hub are secure and authenticated by default. On arrival at the hub transport server, transport rules are applied to further filter the message, consisting of conditions, actions, and exceptions. These rules enable you to create an ethical firewall that ensures inappropriate content does not enter or leave your organization. You can also use transport rules to maintain regulatory conformance. Legal regulations might require that you store messages for search and retrieval on demand by the appropriate government agency. You may also have your own internal organizational regulations that require disclaimers be attached to all messages. The transport agents provide in exchange, running on all the Edge and Hub servers allow you to easily conform to these regulations. You need to install at least one hub server in each Active Directory site that contains mailbox servers. The hub transport server now passes the message from the appropriate mailbox server. If the user is currently connected to the mailbox server from the MIPI client, such as Microsoft Outlook 2007, he or she is notified about the arrival of the new message. If the user is connected through Exchange ActiveSync, Outlook Web Access, OWA, Outlook Anywhere, formerly known as RPC over HTTP, then the client access server is responsible for notifying the user. The client access server role is intended to serve clients, as you probably guessed from the name, but it's primarily for roaming clients. Clients that are on the Wi-Fi in the corporate network or out on the internet talk to it. For example, Outlook Web Access and Exchange ActiveSync. It also has services that serve clients within the corporate network. The availability service, which we'll be talking about later, another one called the auto-discover. It also provides programmatic access to Exchange with a set of web services that allow you to easily build an application that deals with Exchange data. The protocol that's used between each of these clients and the client access server is AirSync, the SOAP, SOAP-based proprietary protocol. The protocol between the client access server and the mailbox server is an RPC protocol. So when you deploy client access servers, you will need to site them fairly close to the mailbox server. For smaller locations, you may have client access, mailbox, and hub transport all from one computer, so that the goals in defining the roles here is to allow you more flexibility, so that you can either separate them out or scale them up individually or put them all together. The message is retrieved by the remote client. The client access server can also ensure that remote users connect to a suitable client access server. One that is in the same site as the mailbox server. This can take the form of either redirection, that is, telling the client which server to use, or proxying. Finally, the new unified messaging server can link your PBX with your email. If a user is available, calls will be routed to telephones and faxes to fax machines. If the user is unavailable, an email message with the attached voice message will be placed in his or her mailbox. Outlook, OWA and EAS clients provide in-message controls to hear and respond to these voice messages. Let's look at the client access and unified messaging roles a little more. The four areas we're going to talk about in this session are Office Outlook Web Access. Outlook Web Access with previous versions of Exchange was popular and successful. Exchange 2007 will let you access even more of the information that you need when you're away from your computer through Outlook Web Access. The primary goal of Outlook Web Access is to be the best companion for Outlook when you're roaming. More of this shortly. The next area is unified messaging. The idea behind unified messaging is you only need to rule one message store, as opposed to two or three different stores. One for your voice and fax, and separate one for the email. You should be able to manage and maintain all of those all at once to reduce your costs. By putting unified messaging into the product, it makes it simpler to administer, because you have a familiar administration model for your unified messaging, voicemail and faxes, as well as for your email. The additional area of focus regarding UM was to round out the remote experience. You have Outlook with the rich experience, you have Outlook Web Access, then, on mobile devices, you've got Exchange Active Sync. The intention was to extend some kind of rich functionality to devices that perhaps don't have Exchange Active Sync by allowing you to dial in and get access to your voicemail. More of this later in the session. The third is programmability. The Exchange product group wanted to make programming against the Exchange source simpler than it has been in the past. In the past, there have been many different protocols as APIs that you could use to program against Exchange. It's been confusing to know which ones to use. Exchange 2007 offers a cohesive set of web services, APIs and Visual Studio integration, so it'll be simple to build your messaging-enabled applications. The last area is mobility. We'll look at the improvements that Exchange 2007 brings here in terms of partnership with current and upcoming releases of the Windows Mobile platform. Specifically, we'll look at end-user productivity improvements and end-user and administrator device management improvements. Let's return to the agenda. Before we talk about Outlook Web Access, let's start with a demonstration. The demonstrations for this session will be using the Beta 2 version of Exchange 2007, which is publicly available now. Outlook Web Access has retained the Outlook 2003 look and feel so that it will be comfortable for a user who switches to OWA from Outlook. In the 2007 version, the designers have added some new touches to make this a better application. Using some of the newer, more modern web techniques, the main design principle for OWA was that users shouldn't have to compromise on experience just because they were using a browser. By the time we reach the end of this demo, you'll see that this has been achieved. If you open the sample email from Katie Jordan, the first thing you'll notice is that it has a chart embedded in it. Let's say we want to forward this to Peter Houston, our PR manager. We click forward, and OWA opens a composed message. One of the things you've always had in Outlook, but not in Outlook Web Access, is autocomplete. As we start typing Peter, if we press Ctrl plus K, OWA completes the rest of the name for me. On future messages, it will remember Peter and autocomplete his name as we type. Let's say we also want to send a copy of the report to Peter's boss, the marketing director. Another great improvement is Office Outlook Web Access 2007 address book. If you click the CC button, you'll see the new address book. In previous versions of Office Outlook Web Access, you didn't see a list of potential recipients, but could only search for recipients. Now, you'll actually browse the global address list. In the center pane, you'll see a list of all the people who are in the global address list. You can also search for people directly from the address book user interface. The availability section calls the availability service for that person and gives us free busy information about that person for the next week or two. And it displays it along with their office address, or in this case, Holly's phone number. The Organization tab provides a quick view of a personal peer's, his or her reports, his or her managers, all the way up to the top. Of course, each of these items is clickable, and it'll open a new window. We can double-click Holly Holt in the address book and add her to the message recipients, and then go ahead and send the message. Now we'll look on how to search messages. Let's say someone has sent us something about an up-and-coming system maintenance on the SharePoint server. If you wanted to see all the messages in our mailbox regarding SharePoint, we could use the new search dialog box. Type SharePoint and then click search. You'll see in real time just how quick the search is. The search has found a variety of items. The second one is a link to a SharePoint workspace. The next few items are from the company's IT director, providing a technical overview of the new systems that his department is building on the company's SharePoint server. When we've completed the search, we can click Clear to return to the inbox. This is taking advantage of the new search capability that's coming with Exchange 2007. That makes the full text contact indexing much faster than it has been in the past. It boosts performance while simultaneously reducing the amount of system resources required. Search will be in the same place in Outlook Web Access as in Outlook 2007. In our sample inbox, we have several emails with varying subject lines regarding the Contoso Hotels opportunity. And it's somewhat confusing. Let's say we've read some of them, but not others, and we're not really sure we are in the process. In the OWA, we can now use the conversation view, which you may recognize from Outlook. If we go to Arrange by Conversation, we can see that it arranges the messages based on conversation. We can see who has responded to whom. If there's a different thread, OWA will handle the indentation of that correctly. We just click and read those messages. Now let's take a look at a meeting request from a colleague, Claire O'Donnell. If you click it, you can see something new in the preview pane. New inline disposition buttons. You can accept, tentatively accept, or decline a meeting request right from the preview pane. If you click the little drop-down arrow on the accept or decline buttons, you can choose whether you're going to edit, send, or not send your reply right from the main Outlook Web Access page. We want to go to this conference, so we'll click accept and then choose to send a response to Claire right away. Let's look at meetings a little more. Let's say you wanted to book a meeting with the entire team. In Outlook Web Access, at the moment, it can be difficult to find time when all the attendees will be all available for a particular meeting. Exchange 2007 introduces a new set of calendaring features. Let's look at one of them now. We'll click New Meeting Request and use the autocomplete feature to put everybody on it. Remember to include a subject and allocation so that everyone knows where the meeting is. If you click the Scheduling Assistant tab, you'll see that it's changed significantly from OWA 2003. In addition, it's now the same in both Outlook Web Access 2007 and Outlook 2007. In the past, if you wanted to find a time when everybody was available, you had to use the AutoPick feature. Even then, it would only find the first time slot when all the people were available. However, there may be more than one day where everyone is available. You now have the suggested times box in OWA. This checks the availability for each of these people for the next couple of weeks and finds days that are better or worse. There's even a key for great, good or poor, so you can pick a date that's good for everybody. It's worth mentioning the show only working hours features. This only shows the working hours for each person. OWA will not show anyone as available outside these hours. We'll send the meeting request and then it's back to the presentation. Let's review a few of the key features from the demo. Here you can see a few of the key features of OWA. Autocomplete. Just like Outlook, OWA now has the autocomplete for email addresses. Search. Search functionality is vastly improved in OWA and is equivalent to that in Outlook 2007. Conversation view. You can organize your messages by conversation in OWA. Notifications. OWA has more features to help you work smarter. Address book functionality has been radically overhauled in the Exchange 2007 version of OWA. Compare the basic address book functionality in Exchange 2003 to the feature-rich version in Exchange 2007. You'd have difficulty believing that this is a web browser. Booking meetings with colleagues is now easier than ever. Outlook is more than just email. Calendaring and booking meetings plays a key part in the Outlook experience. We'll look at calendaring in more detail during the demonstration, but first we'll explore the rich interface of OWA used to book meetings. There are many more new Outlook web access features. There are a couple of other interesting features that we didn't see in the demo. First is auto-updating views. This is something that customers have been requesting for a very long time. In Outlook, you don't have to click send and receive every time you want to check for messages. They just pop up. Now you have the same feature in Outlook Web Access. There is still a send-receive button, but you don't have to use it. The view will automatically update with any new items. The other interesting feature that customers ask for is language. In Outlook Web Access 2003, the language in the user interface is dictated by the language of the browser. So if you go to Paris and sit in the internet cafe and the computer is set to French, as it probably would be, you're going to see the user interface in French. In Outlook Web Access 2007, the very first time you log on, it's going to ask you what language you want, although you can set it in the options page. It's going to keep track of the language you want, so no matter where you are, you will get the user interface in your own language. The next feature sounds like a minor thing, but Exchange 2007 removes the dependence of form-based authentication from gzip compression. This allows people using other kinds of authentication to have the benefit of using gzip compression. The final feature is increased support for authentication mechanisms such as NTLM, Digest, Smart Card, or Exchange 2007 Client Access Servers. There are even more new features. Another major feature in Exchange 2007 is document access. Imagine that you receive an email and you're reading it with OWA. The message is from someone in your team and tells you that a document is on a SharePoint site, ready for you to review. The problem is that it's 8 o'clock p.m., you're at home, and you're supposed to review it for a meeting early tomorrow morning. Without document access, you would have to set up a VPN to work to access that SharePoint site. With document access, Exchange will proxy that document from SharePoint or a Windows file share on your behalf. It only supports read-only access, but it gives you access to those documents directly within OWA without having to expose the entire SharePoint site on the internet. There are a number of security settings and features here. You can have the on-off switch per user. You can have an on-off switch per virtual directory. You can also set it that if the user is connected from a public computer, the document access feature is disabled. Let's take a look at what the document access user interface looks like. Let's return to the agenda. Next, we're going to take an in-depth look at calendaring improvements in the Exchange Server 2007. Exchange 2007 contains a number of features and services dedicated to improving the calendaring experience. This set of services is known collectively as the Calendar Concierge Service. The theory that is today, if you had a complicated calendar needs, you probably have to employ somebody to deal with them. Just like when you're in hotels and you want to have somebody to take care of things, you really want that to be an automated process, so the Calendar Concierge handles these services for you. The first service is meeting processing. Currently, when a meeting request gets sent to you, Outlook has a process that sees the request and automatically places it onto your calendar as tentative. The problem is that if you don't have an Outlook running, then it won't get placed onto your calendar. Alternatively, if you have a rule that moves the request to a different folder, it may not get noticed and put onto your calendar as tentative. In Exchange 2007, meeting processing is moved to the server, so if you are using Outlook 2007, it will no longer automatically mark those requests tentative. The Exchange server will do it for you instead. There are some other interesting features that are part of the server-side processing functionality. If you receive a meeting update, the server is able to tell you that it refers to something on your calendar and is able to do things like delete redundant meeting updates. For example, let's say someone invites you to a meeting, you accept, and then this person sends an update with a new room. And then he or she needs to send an update with a new document. And then the same person sends an update with a new attendee list. This is a familiar scenario. What Exchange 2007 will actually do is delete any of those requests that are redundant, so you only see the most up-to-date version. This actually covers previous versions of Outlook, as well as Outlook Web Access, Exchange Active Sync, and Unified Messenger, so your calendar will be more accurate than before. The next area is resource booking. This is something that a lot of customers are already using in Outlook, but there's been no real support for it in Exchange until now. Exchange 2007 adds schema extensions to Active Directory that allow you to mark a mailbox as room or equipment, and you can put a particular properties on those, such as room capacity, and make the room a TV or projector that you have. Custom defined properties can include anything, such as a widescreen TV. Then, when you're in the address book, there's a specific room-based address book that you can search. Finally, you can search on your custom properties. For example, you can search all the widescreen TVs that are available for use in a meeting. Next is the resource booking attendant. The resource booking attendant is based on resources that you want to book that can be accepted or declined, such as a room or projector. Previous versions of Exchange Server ship with something called the auto-accept attendant. The resource booking attendant is a superset of that auto-accept. The basic functionality of this is an agent that runs on the resource mailboxes. If you invite a room for a meeting and then it's free at that time, it will go ahead and accept the meeting request. You will receive confirmation in the same way as you've invited Bob from HR or Kathy from IT. If somebody else asks for that meeting room for the same period after you received your confirmation, he or she will be declined. You can also do things like limit how much in advance a resource can be booked, who may book a particular resource, and set a maximum duration for use as a resource. You can also set resources to only be available during working hours, with Office Outlook 2007 and Outlook Web Access 2000 clients. Forward out-of-policy resources requests to delegates for approval. Configure custom response messages per resource. Provide conflict information for declined meetings. The next area of calendar concierge services is something we've mentioned a few times. The availability web service. Presently, when you're trying to invite either a person or resource to a meeting, you have the free busy information on the scheduling tab in Outlook. However, this isn't live information. Every 15 minutes, Outlook takes a snapshot of your calendar, whether you are available, free, busy, or out of the office for each lock time. And then it pushes it to the public folder that your client is connected to. This gets replicated against all the public folders in your organization, so they have a replica of the free busy folder. When you try to invite somebody to a meeting, you may have an out-of-date picture of his or her availability. So there's the interval before it's published and the replication interval. So if you only have a single Exchange server in your organization, this won't have much of an impact. But if you're trying to schedule someone who's on a server at the other end of the world, it may take a long time. So you may think that he or she is free, but this person may already have been accepted in a meeting for someone else. This is especially important for resource mailboxes, because when you send an invitee to a resource, you may want to make sure that it's available. As you may realize, the server has an ability here that the client does not. The server can look in the person's actual mailbox and calendar to determine whether he or she is free at a particular time. In Exchange 2007, this information is exposed to the web service that Outlook 2007 and Outlook Web Access 2007 clients will use in place of the free busy. Another dimension of this feature is that it can be configured to get live free busy information from another source. For example, if you set up a trust between two forests, your users will automatically be able to get free busy information for people that have contacts in your forest, but who are actually users in another resource forest. This is great for B2B or merger scenarios. This is deployed in every Exchange 2000 client access server. Outlook 2007 will automatically find out which client access server to use through a process called auto-discover. We'll talk about that in a moment, and public folders are still used by Outlook 2003 clients. One of the things that you may have heard about Exchange 2007 is that it enables you to get rid of public folders. This is an optional thing, but there are at least two requirements for this. All the clients have to be using Outlook 2007, because Outlook 2003 clients will expect to use public folders for free busy information, as we've just seen. Second, Outlook 2003 and earlier clients expect an offline address book that uses the public folders. Now we're going to walk through some availability web service scenarios. The first scenario shows how the scheduling service worked in an Outlook 2007, Exchange 2007 environment. We create a meeting request. We want to invite John and Amy. The scheduling system knows the URL of our local availability service, so it requests the free busy over SOAP. At this point, the availability service analyzes my request and determines which attendees are local and which ones are remote. In this case, John is in the same Active Directory site as the client access server that we're using, so his free busy information is requested directly from the mailbox server using MAPI. Amy is in a remote site, so the local availability service makes an SOAP call to the remote availability service to request a free busy status. The local availability service then combines the local and remote results and returns them to the client. Let's see how the same scenario works with mixed clients and servers. In this scenario, Amy's mailbox is an Exchange 2003 server. Step 1 is exactly the same here. Again, the local availability service determines which attendees are local or remote. The availability service also determines which version of Exchange server the attendee mailbox is running on. John's free busy info is retrieved from the local mailbox server using MAPI. In step 2, the availability service determines that Amy was an Exchange 2003 server, so it makes an HTTP request to the Outlook Web Access free busy URL on the public folder server that's holding Amy's free busy information. Once again, the availability service combines all the results and returns them to the client. In this scenario, Outlook 2003 and earlier clients continue to use the public folders for free busy lookups. An important part of calendaring is out of office. Let's look at some of the improvements. The next thing we'll discuss are out of office improvements. We'll use Outlook Web Access to demonstrate some improvements we've made to this feature. Let's switch back to Outlook Web Access for a brief demo of the out of office feature. Click the options menu and click out of office assistance. This is similar to what you'll see in Outlook 2007 Office Assistance as well. You can now configure the out-of-office assistance to start at the end of a particular time. This is something that many users have asked for. In addition, you can now have a HTML out-of-office messages no longer in just plain text. You can even have a separate out-of-office message for external senders. You may choose to send messages that just notify those particular users that they're not going to get a response from you right away. You can choose to send this to external senders from your contact list, or you can send it to all external senders. Click Save and your out-of-office reply is all set up. These are the same out-of-office improvements are also available in Outlook 2007. Most of the out-of-office functionality enhancements have come directly from customer feedback. You can now schedule your out-of-office notification by setting a start and end time for your out-of-office messages. Users now have far more control over who receives external messages, which help reduce the risk of your organization from spam. The administrator can continue to block who can turn on external messages and limit the domains that they go to. Next, let's talk about unified messaging, which is new in Exchange 2007. Why is unified messaging included in Exchange 2007? Users are ready for unified messaging. Outlook and other devices are more commonly used to manage professional and personal life, so it's logical that this should extend beyond email. They want more value from inboxes and are used to all the semantics that they are using for email. As a result, they're asking for the same semantics to be available for voicemail as well. Your infrastructure is now ready for unified messaging. Voice over IP VoIP is more commonplace than ever. There are voice over IP gateways that allow you to integrate with legacy PBXs, which will enable you to work with existing equipment already deployed in your organization. Exchange has a reliable infrastructure that you can depend on to deliver voicemail to your inbox. Let's look at the Exchange 2007 Unified Messaging feature set. The Exchange product group designed the Unified Messaging Server role to unify the mailbox and to integrate the traditional items found in the mailbox, such as emails and calendar items, faxes and voicing messages. they also sought to simplify administrative tasks by consolidating the infrastructure required to support both emails and telephony in a single unified system. The unified messaging server consists of several components. First, the automated attendant, which functions as an automated telephone answering service. When you call Microsoft, you'll hear the auto attendant working. It's configured to use voice recognition and then access the global address list to route calls to the appropriate person or department. It's expensive to re-employ receptionists, and this facility could offer your company some real cost savings. Although it's configured to use voice recognition at Microsoft, you can also use voice prompts such as press 7 for sales and so forth. Second, call answering, where your unanswered calls get routed as email to your mailbox. If you are available, call will be routed by the UM server to your extension. But if you're not, then you'll receive an email with the voice message attached. What's more, you can access this voice message from a variety of different clients, such as OWA, ES, and Outlook. Third, the fax receiving service will route faxes based on your instructions. If you had a single fax number for your organization, fax will be routed to a single mailbox for onward distribution. If you have a telephone number and fax number, faxes are routed straight to your own inbox. Finally, if you have a single number for faxes and telephone calls, if you answer an incoming fax call, you can use Outlook Voice Access to route it to a fax machine. Or if you don't answer the call, the UM server routes the fax to your mailbox automatically. Last, Outlook Voice Access, which enables you to access your mailbox items from a phone. As with other voice access systems, you can press 7 to delete, 3 to read again, and so on. But what's really great here is you can use voice recognition to instruct the system to clear a calendar, read the next message, and contact you, and so on. That's all in Exchange 2007, Unified Messaging. Some great end-user features and some major cost savings for the administrators. Let's look at the benefits for administrators. Unified Messaging is fully integrated with Exchange and has the same command line administrative tool, the PowerShell, as well as the same Exchange Management Console GUI. You can only have one mailbox to deploy, backup and maintain for your data. And we actually take advantage of Active Directory, unlike most other voicemail systems. When you put a phone number in Active Directory, any voicemails are forwarded to that particular user. Let's see the improved Outlook interface for Unified Messaging. Unified messaging items in Outlook 2007 interface have their own special icons. Voicemail can be either played directly in the message body, or you can choose to play it over the phone. Let's run through a demo. How does the unified messaging architecture fit into the big picture we saw earlier? Exchange 2007 revolutionizes messaging by offering a speech-enabled unified messaging platform that integrates email, fax, and voicemail in the user's inbox with support for a variety of clients, including traditional and mobile phones. Exchange 2007 extends the anywhere access capabilities of Exchange that began with Outlook Web Access and mobile device access, and that were later extended with Outlook RPC over HTTP, now called Outlook Anywhere. Unified messaging in Exchange 2007 further extends anywhere access by allowing you to use a regular telephone to access your email, calendar, contacts, and other inbox items. Outlook Voice Access provides this capability in Exchange 2007. It provides built-in speech recognition, which allows you to access and manipulate your Exchange inbox using your voice or touchtone commands.
In this demonstration, I want to show you Outlook Voice Access in action. To start out the process, I want to create an email message from Ben here and send it to Ken Myers. Then we'll use the telephone to gain access to Ken Myers' inbox and use Outlook Voice Access to read the message back. Create a new message. Use autocomplete for Ken's email address there. I've already got the text in the paste buffer. Dear Ken, all the best with your demonstration this afternoon. Remember to show all the new Outlook Voice Access features. Regards, Ben. Okay, I'm happy with that. And we'll click send. And now we'll switch over to the telephone system and try and access that message. Okay, let's dial into the unified messaging system.
Microsoft Exchange. To access your mailbox, enter your extension. To contact someone, press the pound key.
Okay, so enter my extension.
voicemail box, press the star key.
So in this case, we've got a 6-digit PIN.
We have no new voice messages and one new email message. Please save voicemail, email, calendar, personal contacts, directory, or personal options.
Email.
Opening your inbox. First, an unread message from The Smith, entitled Dublin Voice Access Demonstration, arrived today at 7:37 a.m. Dear Ken, all the best with your demonstration this afternoon. Remember to show all the new Outlook voice access features. Regards. Best. End this message. You can say, play, next, delete, reply, mark as unread, main menu, or more options.
Okay, I'm just going to hang up there. That seemed to be word for word, so that worked well. Okay, in this part of the demonstration, I'm going to send a voicemail message to Ken, and then we're going to use Outlook Web Access to view that. Hey Ken, it's Ben here. I hope the demonstration for Outlook Voice Access is going well, and I will speak to you this evening at our regular evening meal.
To accept, press 1. To send your message with high importance and accept, press 1-1. Play. Message sent. Goodbye.
So that's the message sent. Now we'll wait for a moment and see if it arrives in the mailbox. And in fact, actually, I'll just urge it along here. Okay, we have an anonymous message. Caller ID is obviously withheld. Exchange voicemail. And you can see here that it indicates it's a voice message with the telephone symbol. And we have a little play symbol here underneath, a quick play icon. Let's try that out.
Hi, Ken, it's Ben here. I hope the demonstration for Outlook Voice Access is going well. And I will speak to you this evening at our regular evening meal.
And you can see on the right-hand side, I've got an embedded control here for listening to the message again. And I have an option, play on phone. I'm not going to test that right now. Instead, we're going to move on. But that allows me to redirect the message and listen to the message on any telephone. That's particularly useful, I suppose, if you're in the middle of a busy office and you don't particularly want your work colleagues to listen in on your call. Okay, that seemed to work fine, so we're going to move on. Let's take a look at using Outlook Voice Access to modify items in the calendar. Let's have a look at the calendar for Ken. He's got a number of different meetings. At 2 o'clock in the afternoon, he's got a bug report meeting with Ben. Then a tech ed briefing again with Ben in conference room 2. And then later on, there's the team dinner at local curry place at 9 o'clock. So what I'm going to try and do is to make a change to an appointment using Outlook Voice Access. So if I dial the number...
to Microsoft Exchange. To access your mailbox, enter your extension. To contact someone, press the pound key.
Okay, send to the extension.
Ken Meyer, please enter your PIN, then press the pound key.
Okay, a 6-digit PIN.
You have no new voice messages and no new email messages. Please save voicemail, email, calendar, personal contacts, directory, or personal options.
Calendar.
Sure. And which day shall I open?
Tomorrow.
Opening tomorrow's calendar. First, a meeting from 2 to 3 in your office, entitled Bug Report. You can say, next, I'll be late. Clear my calendar. Or more options.
I'll be late.
Okay. And how late do you think you'll be?
15 to 20 minutes.
15 to 20 minutes. Is that right?
Yes.
All right. I've sent a message to all participants that you'll be 15 to 20 minutes late. By the way, you can save time in the future by saying things like, I'll be 10 minutes late, Continuing the calendar, a meeting from 5 to 6 in Conference Room 2, entitled TEDx Briefing. You can say, next, I'll be late. Clear my calendar. Or more options.
Next.
Last, a meeting from 9 to 10 in January 9th, entitled Team Dinner. You can say, next day, I'll be late. Clear my calendar. Or more options.
Clear my calendar.
Okay, I can use cancel and decline to clear your appointment, starting with the current one. Just say a time of day to clear to, like 3:30 p.m., or a number of days, like 2 days. You can also say cancel to return to your calendar.
10 p.m.
10 p.m., is that right?
Yes.
All right, I'm about to send cancellation or decline messages for the meetings. Would you like to add a voice message to those?
Yes.
I'll start recording your short message after the tone. When you're finished, just hang up or press any key for more options.
I'm sorry, Ben. I don't fancy a curry tonight. Thanks. So I'm hung up now, and we'll give that a moment to think it through and see if the meetings are successfully updated. Look over to Ben's mailbox here, and we can see that the team dinner has been declined, and the bug report meeting is going to be late, 15 to 20 minutes late for this appointment. Well, that seems to have worked quite well. And let's flip back into Ken's mailbox, and refresh the calendar, and as you can see, if we take a look tomorrow, we've got the bug report. Okay, which is going to be 15 to 20 minutes late, and most importantly, we've got a portion of time blocked out because we can't make that particular meeting. Okay, that's great. That concludes the demonstration.
We have the client access server and the unified messaging server. All the clients talk to the client access server, but the unified messaging server talks primarily to your phone system. Your mailbox server, the directory, and the transport. Let's see what it does with each one. First, your phone system. There are two possible paths here. You can have the legacy PBX without voice over IP support, which is far the most common scenario. For those, you will need a voice over IP gateway, also known as a media gateway. There have been two announcements from Microsoft partners that are planning on providing media gateways that will work with Exchange Server 2007. AudioCode and Intel. The PBX voice over IP connects the telephony world to the IP world, either directly on an IPBX or through the voice over IP gateway. So the UM server knows how to talk to these voice over IP protocols. From Active Directory, it gets things like phone numbers and names. It also gets the real recorded name, so even if the mailbox is down for a particular user, the unified messaging can still take voicemail for that user. By accessing Active Directory, it knows the information it needs to take the voicemail and then subs it through SMTP to the Hub Transport server. The voicemail will eventually be delivered to the mailbox server when it comes back up. A key factor is whether or not Exchange 2007 has the availability and fault tolerance built into the system that you need to replace your voicemail system with unified messaging system. As we've seen, Exchange servers are becoming more reliable, with companies counting on them as they do their phone system. But there are a number of availability design points as well. If a gateway is down, you can configure multiple gateways on your PBX. You can set up a hunt group so that if a gateway is down, the PBX will find another one that's up. If the unified messaging server goes down, you can configure multiple unified messaging servers in the Exchange sites that would handle requests in case one of them were to go down. Finally, if the mailbox server is down, you can continue to get voicemail and fax. Obviously, you won't be able to use Outlook Voice Access if it's down because it's accessing data from your mailbox. Let's return to the agenda. Let's move on to the Exchange 2007 web services. In the present version of Exchange Server, there are too many APIs to get data in and out of the Exchange store, and none of them meet all the major requirements that we have. Most people have two major requirements. They need a remote access protocol from the internet. They want Microsoft to take care of the Outlook interoperability. For example, a contact object could have two or three different email addresses. So which one should you set? It turns out that one version of Outlook accepts one kind, another version expects another. So there is a special logic in Outlook to cope with this, although this may not be helpful to developers. MAPI is a powerful API, but it doesn't offer any real remote access from the internet. There's almost no Outlook interoperability built into it. CDO 1.2 was an attempt to put some Outlook interoperability layers in the top of the MAPI, but these are the same remote access issues. In Exchange 2000, Microsoft added WebDAV support, which solved the interoperability problem, but not the Outlook remote access problem. In addition, we need managed code and Visual Studio support, and none of the current APIs offer good support if you're developing in Visual Studio. Just to give you an idea of how confusing the Exchange APIs can be, let's see where they've come from. Many APIs have been built into Exchange over the years. As a result, it's just too complicated for people to know which one they're supposed to use. Let's see how this has been addressed in Exchange 2007. The Exchange product team has unified all the store accesses with web services. As with most of the other new features, this is handled on the server, so no client-side runtime is required. This has been designed from the ground up to provide full Visual Studio support. WebDAV, CDO, and EXOLEDB were all de-emphasized, which means they still may be there in Exchange 2007, but won't be available in the future, so you should start migrating applications to use web services instead. The big benefit of using these web services is that Outlook Exchange interoperability is provided by a common Exchange Business Logic layer that's shared with Exchange Transport, Outlook Web Access, Exchange Active Sync, and other protocols like POP and IMAP. What that means from a developer's point of view is that when you call a message to accept a meeting request, the bulk of the code is in the Outlook Web Access code, which should dramatically reduce the cost of supporting these applications that contain interoperability with the Exchange data, because aren't multiple copies of interoperability layer present at runtime. No client-side runtime is necessary, because it is a web service and there are automated proxies built into Visual Studio. It's simple to build an application. In fact, you can do that from different platforms. The Exchange team is going to be starting a set of blog posts on web services. We'll be publishing a set of code snippets and examples. Let's return to the agenda. Now that we move to our final item in this session, Exchange Server Mobility Improvements. We'll begin by talking about Exchange 2003 Service Pack 2, the Messaging and Security Feature Pack, MSFP, on Windows Mobile 5. There are some major improvements in Service Pack 2, and the Devices and Messaging Security Feature Pack are just starting to hit the market now. This is why we're going to talk about this more. First of all, there is a new direct push technology, which provides an experience such that the mail hits your phone in real time. As soon as it's in your inbox, it's in the inbox on your device. MSFP also added task sync over the air and global address list lookup. So even if you're trying to send mail to someone who is not in your contact list, you can look them up in your global address list. MSFP allows administrators to enforce certain policies that lead to security over the air in Exchange 2003, such as requiring the device to lock after so many minutes of inactivity or requiring a strong password. It allows the administrator to configure the device to automatically delete its data or wipe its local memory if it's locked or an incorrect password is entered or a certain number of times. You also have remote wipe, where the administrator can reset the local storage on a device. So if you lose your phone, you can call your administrator, who uses the web console to send a command to that device that causes it to wipe all its data. For secure connections, MSFP introduced certificate-based authentication for mobile devices. The combination of Service Pack 2 plus the Messaging and Security Pack lets you use your existing Exchange 2003 Service Pack 2 to give the mobile messaging experience that people want without having to pay for the third-party service or license fees. In addition, it's scalable and has low cost. How is mobility improved in Exchange 2007? In Exchange 2007, the Exchange team will be building Exchange Active Sync and mobile functionality that meet the needs of information workers while still keeping sight of the needs to balance management costs. The mobile Outlook experience is still missing some features in comparison to its desktop counterpart. Improvements in the Exchange 2007 timeframe include bringing the Outlook email management experience to mobile devices, building out the experience around handling meeting requests, and generally rounding the Pocket Outlook experience. There is also a lower TCO for the IT professional with easy, cradleless OTA provisioning and management of devices by users. more granular security policies and access control, and enterprise-grade manageability support. Let's take a look at some of the improvements for information workers. Anyone who owns an email-capable mobile device will know that it's actually a good way to keep up to date with and manage your inbox. Outlook facilitates easy email management, and this experience will be replicated in its Pocket counterpart. For example, there is a quick flag support on the device. Most activity on the device is managing email, and is compatible with both Outlook 11 and 12 models. There is support for HTML messaging bodies, which prefers emphasis tables and more for easier reading. What's more, clicking reply won't disrupt formatting in a thread for everyone else. Finally, there's a quick fetch of message bodies. There is no need to mark for download, and it leverages direct push technologies for fast retrieval of emails. Let's look at improvements to meeting handling. The handling of meeting requests is also improved for mobile device users to bring their experience close to that of the desktop Outlook users. As we've already seen, this will be made easier by the fact that all of the processing is now done on the Exchange server. Document access, which discussed earlier, will also be available to mobile device users. We looked at document access earlier, which allows you to access files from SharePoint sites and network file shares straight from an email message. The functionality is similar in a Windows mobile device. Search functionality plays an important role in email management and will be updated in the Exchange 2007 timeframe. Search will be as full-featured as you've come to expect from your desktop computer, and will even now allow you to search items that are stored on the Exchange server. Rich query and filter support will allow you to search by text, date, from, to, flags, attachment, importance, restricted to specific fields, and so on. Out of Office will also be going mobile. Out of Office will be available on mobile devices and has the same functionality you're used to in desktop versions of Outlook. Let's take a quick look at the improvements for IT pros mentioned earlier. These improvements will build on the existing MSFP device management feature set. Key features are services and software that enable easier enterprise deployment and management of Windows mobile devices. MOM support for enhanced enterprise integration and Outlook Web Access self-service, which allows users to perform basic management tasks on their own devices. Let's take a quick look at Outlook Web Access self-service. You can see here that users can request their own remote wipes for devices they own. This reduces the risk of any potential compromise of data on a lost or stolen device. We've come to the end of this session, so let's summarize what we've covered. We've seen the ways that Exchange 2007 will provide you with access anywhere to your inbox, with improvements to Outlook Web Access, and to the new unified messaging role. Mobile device management is improved, and Exchange web services make connecting to your own applications to Exchange simple. To get more information on the products and technologies we have covered today, we have some online resources available that we can help. For the most comprehensive technical information on Microsoft products, visit the main TechNet website at www.microsoft.com/TechNet. You can also visit www.microsoft.com/TechNet/ITProExc-101 for more information on books, courses, certifications, and other community resources that relate directly to this particular session. There are a number of other resources that are available from Microsoft. Be the first to know about upcoming Microsoft betas. Register to receive updates on the Exchange 2007 public beta through a customized Microsoft TechNet Flash newsletter. Find out more at http://www.microsoft.com/technet/prodtechnol/beta/preregister.mspx. Let's look at some of the other resources available. Microsoft also has instructor-led courses if you prefer the classroom-style environment. Microsoft Learning develops courseware called Microsoft Official Curriculum, MOC, which includes e-learning, Microsoft Press Books, Workshops, Clinic, and Microsoft Skills Assessment, MOC, is offered in an instructor-led environment and offers comprehensive training courses for IT professionals in supporting and implementing solutions using the Microsoft products and technologies. The course that best supports this session is Getting Started with Microsoft Exchange Server 2007 Clinic, which is available now. For more information, please visit www.microsoft.com/learning. There is also an assessment program available that can help you test your knowledge. Microsoft Skills Assessment is a free online learning tool. It is an easy way for IT professionals to check their skills. You can quickly check your skills in implementing or managing Microsoft products or business solutions. Just take a short, 30-question assessment and see how well you know your stuff. The skills assessment includes a personalized learning plan, which includes links to Microsoft official curriculum, specific TechNet articles, Microsoft Press books, and other Microsoft Learning content. There's also a way to measure how well you did compared with others who took the same assessment. Microsoft Skills Assessment is an expanding learning platform. Available now are assessments for Windows Server 2003, including Security and Patch Management, Exchange Server 2003, Windows Storage Server, Office 2003, and all VisualStudio.net. If you want to take your skills assessment to the next level, a number of certification programs are available. In the highly competitive IT job market, how can you differentiate yourself from the next candidate? The Microsoft Certification Program provides that edge. Earning a specific accreditation provides objective validation of the availability to successfully perform critical IT functions. Embraced by industry professionals worldwide, Microsoft Certification remains one of the most effective ways to reach long-term career goals. It is a surefire way for companies to develop and retain valuable IT staff. There are a number of accreditations available, starting with the basic Microsoft Certified Professional, MCP. You can choose to go on to become a fully certified Systems Administrator, MCSA, or a System Engineer, MCSE, or a Desktop Specialist, MCDST. Away from the infrastructure side, the MCDBA certifications covers SQL Server products. For more information about the certification program, visit www.microsoft.com/learning/MCP. This session was brought to you by TechNet. TechNet has gone through some changes recently, which I'm sure you'll find interesting to hear about. To help explain this in more detail, I'd like to introduce Carolyn McGrath, IT Professional Marketing Manager, to cover these changes in more detail.
For IT professionals, all the resources in the TechNet program will give you the support you need to be successful with our technology. Whether you are deploying new software, managing a server environment, or troubleshooting, TechNet has a resource for you. Use the web for immediate access to documentation, knowledge base, scripts, downloads, and more. Webcasts and events will give you deep insight into specific technology topics. Keep up to date with technology news using the TechNet Flash. This is a twice-monthly newsletter that you can customize to give you information about the specific technology that interests you. With more time to read, the TechNet magazine is an excellent resource offering in-depth articles written by industry-leading technologists. If you want to ensure that you have all of the essential resources at your fingertips, the TechNet subscription is for you. It includes full version software and betas so that you can evaluate our technology at your own pace. No time bombs, so your product analysis won't time out. It includes two complimentary telephone support incidents. Talk to Microsoft technical professionals to help you with whatever challenges you may encounter with the software. That is $500 worth of value. The TechNet subscription is a great value to all IT professionals. Finally, we have TechNet VLabs. Use this to get your hands on the technology in a hosted environment. You can explore how it works, run different scenarios, and have a full product experience without having to dedicate your time to deploy and manage the hardware to do so yourself. Overall, the TechNet program has all of the resources you need to get the most out of Microsoft technology. TechNet Plus subscription. What is it? Get hands-on experience with the technology through software and betas, including Office, Windows, and servers. Support when you need it, including two free telephone support incidents. Easy access to information via updates, utilities, white papers, knowledge base, and more. Work on your skills at your own pace. E-learning courses and training. The TechNet Plus subscription. That's what it is. Need support? Answers are standing by. You have a choice of three support offerings from Microsoft. Firstly, we have online and self-help. Choose from the TechNet website, the Security Center Online, Knowledge Base, Product Support Centers, the TechNet Script Center, News Groups, User Groups, and the TechNet Plus subscription. Secondly, we have assisted incidents. Assisted incidents include email support, phone support, phone support contracts, advisory services. Finally, contract-based support. Contract-based support is offered to organizations and consists of premier support or essential support. Thank you for listening to this TechNet session.